KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Hayward.
Richmond.
San Pablo.
Yeah, San Pablo.
I live in Novato.
Emeryville.
Coming up, we'll hear voices from the third annual Women's March in San Francisco.
I see each of these people here as the next potential leader.
Then we'll check in with one of the queens of the San Francisco scene, Peaches Christ, on drag becoming part of mainstream culture.
Over the years, I've been less angry or political, but I still stand by that.
And from our program Uncuffed, a father and son housed in different prisons form an unbreakable bond.
He's not perfect. However, I know that in his heart, that he loves me more than he loves himself.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, let's start with a reflection on human rights. Yesterday, America celebrated Martin Luther King Jr., and on Saturday, people around the country came together for the third Women's March. More than 40,000 people gathered in San Francisco. Like at previous Women's Marches, people of all ages arrived at Civic Center Plaza, toting signs critiquing the Trump administration. And this year, many also carried signs reflecting the newer issues of the Me Too movement, like, quote, "I stand with Christine Blasey Ford," or, quote, "Mute R. Kelly." But the march also fell in the midst of an ongoing controversy involving Women's March leadership, which has been accused of anti-Semitism. KALW's Priya Mahadevan was at this year's march, where she collected these voices.
I got a question for you. If you woke up like me, hella hyped to be here at the 2019 Women's March, make some noise.
My name is Toni Marie Esperanza. I'm a Bay Area native. I'm 64 years of age. I'm so glad that our representatives are turning female because the future is female and we need that. We need another perspective. We've had many, many years of oppression. We need to see what the other side can bring.
I just want to help represent all the women, and I identify myself as a feminist, which to me means equal rights for every gender. I'm Zoe. I am 18 and I'm from Palo Alto. I love it. I feel like when I'm listening to them, I get like those body shivers, you know, when you're like, wow, this is like amazing. It's like kind of like when you listen to a really good song and then you get like those shivers. So yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Keep your hand up if you can name one missing or murdered Indigenous woman by name. If you cannot do so, put your hand down. What does it mean to be an ally? What does it mean to be unified if you leave us to carry our grief alone?
I'm Estela Reyes Garcia. I'm Chicana. I like to be identified as working for the Latino community through Instituto Familiar de la Raza. I'm the executive director there. This march represents a greater force in our country. We are the majority, right? There's this whole myth that the Republican, the conservative environment is the majority thought, and it's absolutely false. We're here to say we're present, we're going to continue our struggle, and you know, these are human rights, and it's important for us to be here. So I'm happy to be here with everyone.
I'm Brad Kittredge from San Francisco. I'm 42.
Kate Kittredge, San Francisco, 39.
Our daughters brought us out here today, really thinking about what the world's going to be like for them and the opportunities that they're going to have going forward.
We want to raise big, strong, powerful, empowered girls to turn into strong, daring women and for them to have every opportunity that any kid wants to have. And see a lot of challenges and barriers in their way, and we want to contribute one small voice to trying to break those down a little bit.
I'm Marcy Glazer. I'm 49 years old, and I'm the CEO of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. I am confident that this local Women's March is led by people who are reaching their hands out across so many different communities, especially to the Jewish community, and they have stood up and spoken out about anti-Semitism. Look, we're 2 years in to the awakening of the movement at this scale and across so many different communal groups. And it can be easy to get discouraged. It can easy to get fatigued even when you see progress. My Jewish tradition says, take the long view. And in the long view, I see each of these people here as the next potential school board member, the next potential state legislator, the next potential leader. And the numbers are smaller, but the passion is the same.
We will
fight!
We will
fight!
When I say we will, y'all say resist! We will
resist!
We will
resist!
I'm Sister Kay Thulu. I'm 45 years old. And sister is a great way to identify me. Thanks.
I'm Sister Harrisy's Candy, and I am 48 years old.
We're here to march for women.
Regardless of what's happening at the national level, this is my community. This is where I can stand up for women. And this gathering needs to happen and get bigger. And, you know, seeing people's excuses this morning on social media about, like, not showing up, it's like, you know, women show up for us so many ways every day that we don't even know. And this is one way that we can support and change this world, because when women are free, we're all free.
When I say we will, y'all say win. We will.
Win.
We will.
Win. My name is Celia. I'm 5 years old, and I live in Salinas. My favorite part is being here that all the girls are together.
That montage was produced by Priya Mahadevan. She's a fellow in our Audio Academy training program. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Peaches Christ has been a force in the San Francisco drag scene for more than 20 years. But audiences around the world enjoy the legendary diva. The performer, playwright, and filmmaker is known for putting her own hilarious spin on cult films by producing parodies. KELW's Janae Darden recently sat down with Joshua Grinnell, also known as Peaches Christ.
What was it like that first time dressing up?
Some of the things I remember specifically were how uncomfortable it all was,
okay.
You know, how fun and liberating it was, you know, kind of, I'd never worn a costume so outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you realize is like by becoming another character, it just pulls a performance out of you. I was always an oddball. So I think growing up in Maryland, and being raised in a very Catholic school environment and growing up in Annapolis, I felt like an outsider, you know, sports and athletics and mm-hmm. suburban life. I just didn't fit in. You know, I was always different. And I always loved movies and I loved theater and I loved horror and drama and, you know, really crazy stuff. And so I was never discouraged from pursuing those things. You know, I tried sports. I hated it. You know, I tried all the normal kid stuff. So I really started writing and directing little movies and plays. And I did a haunted house when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14. That ended up becoming pretty successful, you know, with my parents helping. You know, my mom would sell tickets and dress up as a witch. And my dad would take the chain off the chainsaw and he would help with the finale. Yeah, they really supported me in a way that at the time I just sort of, you know, accepted as normal. But I realize now, you know, having a lot of creative friends, that I actually was really fortunate. When I discovered that John Waters was making movies in Baltimore up the street, you know, Hollywood seemed like a million miles away, which pretty much was, but that there was this man making movies in neighborhoods that I recognized, neighborhoods that my relatives lived in, you know. And when he made Hairspray and I was in junior high and I discovered Divine, you know, this larger than life, you know, drag queen starring in a movie that at the time Maryland was, you know, embracing, you know, they were proud of Hairspray. Everything before Hairspray, I think they kind of wanted to ignore, you know, all the really shocking stuff. But Hairspray was really successful. And from Hairspray, I discovered the early films of John Waters, which were life-changing because they were so punk rock and subversive and transgressive and wild. And I couldn't believe this guy was from Maryland, and Divine and Mink Stole, they were all from Maryland. I knew I wanted to get out of Maryland. And so I ended up going to Penn State, where I actually feel like I maybe was a bigger fish because I was such a weirdo at Penn State. You know, I was this sort of John Waters obsessed cult film kid who wanted to make, you know, underground movies, and everyone else there was kind of wanting to be Martin Scorsese. It was definitely John Waters actually who put a lot of ideas in my head in a lot of ways. I said I wanted to move to New York or LA after I graduated, and he said, have you considered San Francisco? And he actually told me about the Coquettes and said, there's this renegade troupe of drag performers that we used to hang out with in the late 60s who were all living in a commune, and they used to do shows in a movie house, you know, at midnight before movie screenings. And he really planted a lot of seeds. It was before the Coquettes documentary came out. So in 1996, you know, that was before the first dot-com boom. So it was still kind of a city where you could go and kind of, you know, have a part-time job and be creative and be a performer and, you know,
days.
Yeah, and pay your rent and, you know, yeah.
Okay, so Peaches Christ sounds almost like Jesus Christ.
Yes.
You're Catholic? Is that
correct? I'm a former Catholic.
Okay.
I was raised very Catholic. And I think in a way, culturally, if you're raised very Catholic, you know, I will always kind of identify some part of myself as Catholic, even though I don't care for religion, you know.
Because I wanted to know, did that inspire the name?
I didn't want to take the name of a pop culture celebrity because you never know, you know, how long they're going to last,
right.
You know. And I certainly wasn't prepared to do drag for this long. I couldn't have predicted that. But I knew that I wanted something that wasn't going to, you know, be meaningless in 6 months. And so I chose this name. But definitely part of it was saying, hey, I grew up in this environment, this family, this school, this community that asked me to believe in it. And then when I was starting to form my identity, and really be more comfortable in my skin, I had a real conflict with what the church was telling me, which was like that I was a sinner and that I was going to go to hell if I, you know, acted on who I am. And at the time as well, you know, there was a lot of hypocrisy in the church as there is now. And so all I really wanted to do was to take a name that had been used a certain kind of way and say, I want to use this name to entertain, to inspire people, and to maybe take some of the pain away from like-minded people as myself by taking a little bit of that power away.
How do you feel about drag being so mainstream now?
I certainly have mixed feelings about it. I think that people expect maybe us older queens who didn't have a TV show to propel us to the sort of the fame and the money they're making is just unreal. And really it would be easy to be, you know, jealous or bitter about that stuff. But honestly, I mean, I really feel like me and my friends, and I've spoken with people like Coco Peru and Varla Jean Merman about it, and Heclina. And it's like, I'm really glad that I got to be part of that sort of drag generation where we kind of had to figure it out on our own and put one foot in front of the other. Over the years, I've been less and less angry or political because I've been, you know, performing for so long. But I still stand by that. You know, I still believe that taking the power away from something that was used to hurt a group of people is what, in a sense, makes people, you know, respond to Peaches Christ. I'm still drawing a very similar audience who is attracted to what I do because they're a fan of the movie that I'm parodying, or they're a fan of the cast, or they're a fan of mine. And so the response is often very similar, mm-hmm. you know, because it's sort of this appreciation. You come to the show and you are part of the cult.
That was San Francisco drag performer and filmmaker Peaches Christ speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. You can catch Peaches performing in her new show tonight at the Castro Theater in San Francisco. It's a send-up of Stephen King's The Shining, and it's called The Whining. This is Cross Currents. I'm Henat Baba. And next, a story from Uncuffed, our series from Solano State Prison in Vacaville. With help from our team, the men there record interviews and edit them into short pieces that we play for you here on KLW.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Lorenzo Fosselman went to prison, he got closer to his father. Even though his dad was miles away in a separate institution, Lorenzo shared his story with Uncuffed producer Steve Drown, who's also incarcerated at Solano.
Son and father, Lorenzo Fosselman, junior and senior, are both serving life terms. They haven't been housed together in prison, but have rather created and maintained a close father-son relationship via letters. As a result of their mutual understanding of the law, each is now working in the law libraries of their respective prisons, helping other inmates as well as themselves.
I don't remember my first prison experience. I remember a prison experience or several of them in between. I remember the most vivid memory I might have is probably riding in the freeway, looking at the prison. One time where I visited in Soledad, we did a family visit. And I remember 2-3 o'clock in the morning when they used to press the bell and my father used to have to get up and go out and be accounted for.
What is that feeling when you walked out of a visiting room at the end of a visit with your mother and knowing your dad can't walk out with you?
I think it's something that as a child, you can't really articulate, but it's something missing from you, you know, because you might, for me, I would go to a Pop Warner football game the next day and mm-hmm. I couldn't look in the stands and my father wouldn't be there, right? So when he got out and he paroled, he was in the stands, and that was like one of the greatest feelings that I had was to score a touchdown and my father was in the stands. So I do remember that as having an effect on me. Once he learned that what my situation was, he immediately wrote me, and he got it established for us to have correspondence through our counselor. So good. At the time, he was in Pelican Bay, and I was in the county jail. So it allowed me to really get a chance to see how much he really truly cared for me, because I was in a situation to where I was facing a life sentence, and he tried to get me encouraged to go to the law library and study my case and, you know, how to interact with different prisoners that I was going to have to deal with facing a life sentence. So everything that he's ever told me, I was able to reflect and to see that was in my best interest. It just came from a perspective that he only knew.
How does that make you feel that you've, as I said, that you've gotten this relationship with him and this rapport with him, and you're sharing advice with each other and helping other guys, but you don't have that opportunity to sit down like you and I are right now in the same room and talk?
Yeah, well, I often think about that, you know, and what I've gotten out of my father over the years of corresponding, I guess now it's been about 17 years close to, is us getting to know each other as me becoming an adult. As I've gotten older, I'm able now to appreciate some of the things that he tried to tell me that I wasn't receptive to when I was growing up.
Have there been any letters that have had a special significance to you?
The most important letters came when he was sending me case law and writing motions for me to basically help me get out of the situation that I was in and get my life sentence off. I think that all of the letters that have to do with me, the questions that I might have had about, like, you know, when you're young, you're angry about a lot mm-hmm. of things. So he would be a voice of reason. I might not agree with everything that he said, but I would have to think about it. You know, those letters were important for me in order to interpret the reality in which I was experiencing in my transition, you know.
Are you proud of your father for the man he's become now?
Let me say this. My father made a lot of mistakes in his life, right? He's not perfect. However, I know that in his heart that he loves me more than he loves himself. So for that particular reason, I respect the man that he is.
Do you think he's proud of you?
I'm sure of it. He's one of my greatest encouragers, you know?
Is there anything else you'd like to say to your dad? If he were sitting across from you right now.
I appreciate you for being you. And I look forward to the day to when we can get out there in society and, you know, and experience life together.
That was Lorenzo Fosselman speaking with Steve Drown, a student in KLW's radio program at Solano State Prison. Uncuffed is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, klw.org/uncuffed. And one last thing in our show today to celebrate the sun coming out after 2 weeks of rain. It's from KELW's ongoing series, My Mixtape, where folks share songs that have made a difference in their lives. Well, rapper Tajay Massey, one of the founding members of Souls of Mischief and part of the hip-hop collective Hieroglyphics, tells us how Roy Ayers' Everybody Loves the Sunshine really does feel like a sunny day.
My name is Tajay, and my mixtape is Roy Ayers' Sunshine.
My life, my life, my life, my life in the sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine.
It literally comes together like sunrise.
Sunshine.
Or like you're walking outside and light is hitting you, you know?
Everybody loves the sunshine.
Everybody loves the sunshine. So it's universal. It also touched me from a cultural perspective.
Sunshine.
And the way that the music is and unveils or unfurls itself is similar to sunshine.
Sunshine. Yeah. Folks get brown in the sunshine.
Y'all said folks get brown in the sunshine. To me, as a young black man, I'm taking that as like, yeah, brother, yeah, you know.
Just bees and things and flowers.
Because of the lyrics, because of the way the instrumentation is, and because of the way the song unfolds, it brings you to exactly what they're talking about. So to have a song that's able to elicit this literal feeling from you, you know, to me that was like mind-blowing as a kid. Like every time I hear this song, it feels like summertime.
My life, my life, my life, my life in the sunshine.
That mixtape was produced by Kristen McCandless. You can listen to more mixtapes or, better yet, submit your own. Go to kalw.org. And while you're there, make sure to subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast.
Everybody loves the sunshine.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Joanne DeLuna, Sarah Nora Coast, Lisa Morehouse, Drew Gwynn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plotchick, Andrew Stelzer, Eli Wortschafter, and Aaliyah Yates. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.